giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
This is the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast, where we explore the design, development, and business of great products. I'm your host, Victoria Guido, and with me today is Hamida Nawoga, founder of Hobby, showing you how to turn your hobbies into a form of therapy. Hamida, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, great. Well, why don't you tell me something that's going on in your world outside of work, just to intro yourself. What are your interests outside of your startup and your job?
Yeah, my interests outside of like work and business, outside the biggest one is digital art. I used to be really, really into it, but then I took a break, but now I'm finding it again. So yeah, I've been doing that a lot recently. Also, I'm trying to get into like Audible books. Ooh. I tried reading, but I can't stand it. So I'm back to Audible books.
Oh, nice. Audible books. And you said digital art?
Yeah, digital art.
What kind of digital art do you bank?
I'm using Krita. It's a software. I use like a Wacom tablet and draw stuff like flowers, sunsets, stuff like that.
That sounds really nice. I love that. I've got a little art project myself coming up on Wednesday this week.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm a big sister of, you know, big sister, little sister. And so me and my little sister are going to do these like oil paint by number kits. So it's like a mentorship program in San Diego. So it's a lot of fun for me and for my little. So yeah, I'm excited about that. And I love your idea of your company. So, you know, a lot of people, when you tell them you have a hobby, sometimes they think about, oh, you should monetize it and you should like make money off of it. But I like that your take is, oh, you should make therapy out of it. You should get emotional well-being out of your hobbies. So tell me a little bit more about like what led you to that idea.
Originally, I wanted to learn how to hula hoop. I saw this music video, you know, and this person was like looking super cool, doing all these tricks, you know, like it looked amazing to me. So I was like, you know what? I want to be able to do that. So that's how my journey started. I tried the YouTube videos, but it wasn't really helping me as much. I'm more of a person who learns in person, like someone shows me what I'm doing wrong exactly. So that's why I try to find an in-person teacher. But I found a circus school that was charging $80 per lesson, which is just about an hour. That was like too expensive for me.
$80 for a hula hoop lesson?
Yeah, because they were charging like the rate of the circus school. Like if you want to have any aerial lessons, hula hoop, it would all go into one thing. So it's like $80 an hour. That's why I was like, you know what? I know somebody in Boston knows how to hula hoop enough that they could teach me how to do it. They may not be a professional hula hooper, but they can at least show me the basics. So that's where the idea came from, of trying to learn skills from your neighbor that isn't really a professional at it.
So it all circles back to hula hooping.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. It makes so much sense, right? Like, yeah, you don't necessarily need a professional circus performer to teach you how to hula hoop. There's someone who'd be willing to do it. So yeah, so we went from that idea. And what was kind of your first step where you knew, oh, maybe I could make something out of this? How did you get there?
Yeah, and I was looking around. I couldn't find like a good solution to like this whole skill sharing thing. The best thing I found was Skillshare. And it was like an online platform where you could learn like animation, you know, Photoshop, that type of stuff. But it didn't really cater to like the soft core skills, like skating, that type of stuff. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this, you know, like be like an Uber, but for skills. Yeah. And doing that was extremely difficult, like resource wise. And like in general, it was a very hard task to tackle. And when I went to startup forums, like groups, they would tell me that you have to be specific. Like, this is not going to work because you have to worry about like the two-sided marketplace, you know, and if you add like different locations in that, it's going to be very, very difficult. So yeah, that's, I tried doing that for about a year and I was seeing some growth doing like a few skills, mainly like art, cooking. But after a while, I started getting burnt out, mainly because I didn't really have a huge passion for that. By trade, I'm a mental health nurse. I've been one for the past 5 years. So I took a break for about a month and I was thinking, okay, what do I enjoy doing? And if it was to fail, what would I not regret spending a lot of my hours doing? And that was mental health. So that's where the idea came to me to make new hobbies a form of therapy.
I love that. And curious, what else about your background helped kind of informed your ideas around the therapy side of it?
I guess this kind of goes into my background. as a nurse, I worked in the emergency room and then also inpatient psych. And I was seeing a lot of patients that come back again and again. They lack a couple of things in their environment outside of like a psych unit, for example. On the psych unit, they have a structure like you go to group art therapy, then you talk about your feelings, you have a support there around you, you know. And then once they get discharged back into the community, most people don't have these things. That's probably why they're in the hospital in the first place, you know. And so I was thinking, like, what if someone can have this type of structure on the outside without having to be in the hospital? I mean, some people do, but you have to have insurance, you know, costs a lot of money. So that's where Hobby was trying to come in, to be a structure, you know, like a fun thing that's not just, okay. And I'm not putting down psychotherapy at all, but sometimes people don't want to talk about their feelings all the time. You know, sometimes people want to do something fun, like while also like having a mental health professional around to like guide them.
Yeah, I totally get that. Like I had been doing some of the talk therapy like apps, you know, like BetterHelp and things like that. And it was fine. But then I kind of switched to just doing the tarot deck app instead because it's more fun and it's less like just deep thinking about your feelings. It's kind of like expressive. And and I think the interesting part about your journey here and like what I've heard is a repeating theme so far this year on the podcast is that like the real answer to a lot of problems is community and having those connections
yes.
between people. And like, mm-hmm. I love that you're working on how can tech solve that and how can you make it affordable for people to build those communities and have access to those support networks and structure. Let me recap a little bit. So you wanted to learn how to hula hoop and then you wanted to find someone to teach you. And then you wanted to build an app to get that skill sharing going, but you thought you maybe wanted to make it a little more specific. So you wanted to kind of bring in it as like hobbies as therapy. And that's where you are today, right?
Yes. It was a long journey. It's when you say it, it sounds like it's been a couple months, you know, but it's actually been, it's a span of years.
So how would you describe where you're at now in your customer discovery journey and your finding your product market fit?
Yeah. Right now, I would say I have found my customer, but I am in a place where I'm making income from hobby. It's not enough to like be profit. Obviously, I'm still starting out because this I pivoted about 8 months ago to go to like the hobbies as a form of therapy niche. And I have found some customers. I have some repeating customers, people who actually enjoy this, that like, you know, this is actually amazing. This has helped me a lot with my life. Yeah. And the way I find these people is by providing community.
So you found users through your existing community connections and through the groups that you're running. Is that right? Nice. Yeah. Yeah. And so you kind of found that like the traditional marketing models where you put out an ad and people click through, like it wasn't a good enough management of expectations from like end to end. So like kind of going to the groups first and forming the connection and then being like, we can use hobby to facilitate this connection worked more for you.
Yes. And also the other thing too that worked for me, and because like the issue with hobby, it's a two-sided marketplace. So I have to worry about like the therapists that are going to be offering the sessions as well as the people who are going to be paying to have these sessions. So it was very tricky to try and balance those two sides, but I did find a medium. Like the key, if I was to key takeaway from this, if I was to tell anybody, the main thing to focus on is to build like a strong relationship with, doesn't have to be a lot of people, like try start with one person and just make sure that you give them what they need, you know, like they feel like this is something that's worth it to them. And then from there, try and replicate that if you can to a second person, then a third person. Like something like that, because you have to personalize it as much as you can.
Yeah. And what were some of the unique needs of therapy providers and people who would be participating in these community groups that was surprising to you when you started this process?
Was it surprising to me? I don't know if it was really surprising. When I started, I was trying to find like whoever needed the app the most, you know, in terms of both mentors and the student side. And I found like there's a lot of people out there that are trying to make money teaching what they know. I found a lot of art therapists that wanted to join hobby, and it wasn't very difficult to do. But I guess the tricky part, or like the surprise that I found, was not just finding someone who wants to make the money, but is willing to take a loss a little bit for you, or like for that cause. I don't know if that at all answers the question, because I was finding people that were like, yes, I want to make money teaching like art therapy to a group of people. But then when they had a class, for example, and nobody showed up, it was like a huge blow to them. They're like, no, I don't want to do this. And that was when I just started with this niche. But then I was lucky enough to find a couple of art therapists that were willing to give it time and actually volunteer their time, like 1 hour a month. And just give like a free session or yeah, stuff like that. And then I noticed that over the months, now that mentor or like those ones that I'm working with are actually now getting a profit.
That's interesting, right? Because you're providing a platform. It's not a guarantee that people are going to make money right away. And you have to have a similar kind of community mindset that you're going to need to put in the time and start showing up regularly. And not everyone's going to be a good fit for that. So that's really interesting. Yeah. Well, I really like that. Tell us a little bit more about it. What kind of things can you get into on the app or on the website?
We offer art therapy, dance therapy, and writing therapy or journaling, and then some cooking classes. So those are like the main things that you can get into. And then for people who are new to this type of, you know, like therapy, mental wellness, we do have a category called mental wellness skills. They can join there and learn like basic coping skills, emotional regulation and stuff like that.
I love that. I saw all those services and I was like, oh, this sounds really nice. Maybe I should sign up. But how do people access the app? Because I know you're trying to balance making that profit and also providing services to people who can't afford it. So how did you strike that balance?
Yeah, I'll be super honest. I am still trying to get that balance. But again, like I said, it depends on finding someone whose priorities fit your priorities. Like, for example, I'm not going to go to an art therapist who has like 10 years of experience, used to like charging $200 a session and ask them, hey, could you join hobby and take this huge pay cut for me? Like, that's not going to work out. The balance I found through getting the right person to work with me, because to this person, they actually see a lot of potential and they actually are making more than they would have without hobby. And to the user coming to the platform, they are getting someone who's very enthusiastic about what they're doing. And it's actually helping them out a lot at a fraction of the cost of what they would get elsewhere.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I saw you had some different pricing points too. You could pay just like per session that you wanted and join for free, or you could get like a regular amount of sessions per month and things like that. Yeah, both sides of the marketplace. I love that. Ooh, so tell me more about like, what's the impact that you're seeing now that you've gotten some traction and you're starting to see people really use it? Tell me more about those stories where people are saying, you know, it makes my life so much better.
I didn't really start seeing the impact again, like until a couple months started rolling by, because it would take some time again to get used to something. First, they go check it out. You know, they're like, oh, actually, this is kind of nice, you know? Then they go back again, like, oh, actually, maybe it's actually really good for me. Then as they start using it over and over again, they start seeing the value of it. And that's what happened. So a lot of the good reviews that I was getting from users who have been using it for like 3 months now. And they like it a lot, again, because of the two main reasons. The instructors are usually very enthusiastic and are wanting to help them, and they can feel that. The other thing is like they get a community, because it is mostly like group sessions. So people have an option to do one-on-one sessions if they want with the instructors, but usually it's just group sessions and the cost is the same, $5 for all the sessions. So it's like very, very affordable. And people keep coming back. I'm only paying $5. I get a group that I talk to, make some friends. I have a therapist that I can talk to. You know, it combines and adds up over a couple months of doing it.
I can imagine that'd be really stabilizing for a lot of people, especially for people who maybe aren't able or can't afford to travel in person to these types of sessions.
Yeah, I think it's stabilizing. And that's what I was keeping in mind when I was making the platform and talking with the mentors. I try to ask them to create like a structure to their sessions, not just like random like days, you know? So like it's usually the same day every week, you know? So like, and the same time every week. So, you know, like, okay, every Monday I have a support group that I go to like do art journaling and then talk about how I feel, you know, like check in with people, they check in with me, stuff like that.
That's really wonderful. And so I that's an incredible thing to be working on. So how do you think about what success looks like for you this year or 5 years from now?
Yeah. What does success look like? What success would look like for me, I would say, since this is like a self-funded platform. And right now I am bootstrapping and I'm kind of in the negative. Although I have been steadily, you know, like the app is growing. I'm very happy for that. I'm getting more users coming back over and over again. I'm getting good reviews. I'm getting new mentors joining. So it is heading in the right trajectory, but it's like a slow but steady growth. And I want to keep it that way because we run into some blunders sometimes. And I can't imagine having a whole bunch of people in the app and then having a blunder, you know, and how I would deal with that. But anyway, I digress. What success would look like for me is if I am in a profit margin. So like not being in the negatives, but in the green. You know, I don't have to have like a lot of money, but as long as I'm not working in the negatives, that'll be success for me. And in terms of the platform in general, success would look like, again, like steady growth. Just keep going up and hopefully have less blunders along the way. Like, for example, I mean, I'm sure many founders have dealt with this, especially in tech. Like you built this platform, you know, things are going smooth, then boom, the website crashes, you know? And it's like, people get pissed off and it's like, what's happening? You know, and it's a lot of stress to deal with sometimes. But in that aspect too, success would look like having less of that happen and having more of the good stuff happen.
Yeah, so steady profits, steady performance of the application. Those are two great goals. I love it. How did you approach building the tech side of the company? And was there things from your own background that you found were helpful? Or did you find people to help you with parts of it? Or how'd you do it?
That was a very huge hurdle for me because my background, again, is in nursing. I don't have any friends who are in tech. I went to a pharmacy college school, like a healthcare university, so they did not have any like developing computer science programs. When I had this idea, I was like, how the heck am I going to do this? Because I don't have any connections. You know, I didn't even have a LinkedIn. Yeah, so it was a lot of like searching online. I did get scammed twice trying to do this, but I was thankful that because my job, I'm able to have a steady income. I was able to like eat up those losses and learn from my mistakes. And I found a development company that I worked with and I've been working with for a while now, and they're very good. So they have been helping me. Like price-wise, they're great, and product-wise, they're also great.
Yeah, it can be really hard to navigate when you don't have experience or any connections to the community, but I appreciate you sharing that because I think it's a really common story that happens to people and not a lot of people talk about it.
Yeah, the other thing too that I should warn any new founders out there or people in the community as well, watch out for who you work with, you know, like really, really do your due diligence because I learned the hard way twice. It was different times and it was different ways that I got scammed, not the same way. But yeah, people will approach you, you know, give you a great price point. And if you're like really desperate, you know, and you really don't have the money and want to see like the results right away, you might get sucked into it, but just always do your due diligence and try to find other options.
Yeah. And, you know, talk to companies like Thoughtbot who won't scam you.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm excited to hear. And there's, you know, don't feel bad also, like those companies that do that, that's what they do. And they're really good at it. And it can happen to anybody. And same with like mental health and, you know, wanting more connections and struggling with it. It sounds like you could use Hobie to find connection now and find people to help you get through that. So I really think that's important.
Giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
Are you an entrepreneur or startup founder looking to gain confidence in the way forward for your idea? At Thoughtbot, we know you're tight on time and investment, which is why we've created targeted one-hour remote workshops to help you develop a concrete plan for your product's next steps. Over four interactive sessions, we work with you on research, product design sprint, critical path, and presentation prep so that you and your team are better equipped with the skills and knowledge for success. Find out how we can help you move the needle at tbot.io/entrepreneurs.
Let me think about what core values drive your everyday decisions.
Do things leaner. You know, like I saw this lecture, like the lean startup, start as lean as possible and get the fundamental idea running without having to put a lot of money into it. And then for my core values, I would say like integrity, doing what makes me happy, And so it doesn't feel like I'm pushing like a heavy rock, just doing what feels like that's something that just flows.
I like that. Yeah, I think the lean startup is really smart. And it is funny when people ask me about app ideas, like it's so tempting to just want to go build something and just see if people like it. But the answer is always like, we'll go talk to people first before you like spend a lot of time building something, which is a lot harder and scarier to do. And so I really appreciate you sharing that. And then I liked your values, integrity, and like a self-fulfillment, self-actualizing feeling, not just like being repetitive loops. But yeah, no, that's really nice. And then what are the biggest challenges in your horizon that you see?
The blunders that I talked about earlier, whereby something that you didn't expect to happen happens, and something that's usually bad that you didn't expect to happen happens. That's one of the biggest challenges that I'm trying to face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess like how do you plan for the unexpected, you know, and how do you like do like a and like a backup plan in case something fails? How do you handle it? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, now you're getting into like resilience engineering. I love it. Yeah, you're working with your development partner. Have you all talked about service level objectives or any kind of like application monitoring or anything like that?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. And when I do say blunders, I don't mean like the app is crashing every like day or like, no, like it's in terms of like one example was what happened. We use this video calling software and it's not with Hobby. It's through a different third party video calling software. And we just added their API into our website. And one of the mentors was giving a session one day and their camera just stopped working. And it happened like twice. And it's like, how do you deal with that? Because it's not even like the app itself. So it's not my developers that are causing the issue. It's the third party that we worked with that's causing the issue, you know? And it's like, so I have to go find out and find a different third party person to work with and hope that that doesn't happen with them. Yeah, it's just like stuff like that. How do you predict the unpredictable? You know, like I guess sitting down and thinking about all the bad possible things that could happen. I don't know.
Yeah, like there's a balance, right? Between there are some things you could put a lot of structure and process around. And then like, well, is that necessary? Like, is that the highest priority use of your time right now? Because yeah, lots of things can go wrong. APIs can break. You know, people push updates. DDoS attacks are happening more and more. Ransomware attacks. There's all kinds of things that can happen that, yeah, it's pretty tough. But I think what you've done where you've built a really strong relationship with your service providers and with your users will help you in the long run, because everyone has issues like that. Like nobody, no app is perfect. So if you're providing a really good service and the majority of the time it's working, then you're probably fine. It's like, when do you make that choice between like really investing in like the application monitoring piece and things like what you're kind of talking, like it might be a major architectural change in the app that you would have to like invest in. So that's something that I think about a lot is like, how are leaders making these decisions? And like, do you have someone to go to like bounce ideas off of? I'm sure you have mentors in the startup community in Boston that you can like go to for advice on those things now. And how I actually know that you know Jordan through the Boston Startup Network area. How has that community been for you?
Oh, it's been good. It was a great community. I was there in the accelerator, prepare for VC. I was there from July till September, and I learned a lot from them. They left their arms open. They're like, if you ever need to come back, you can always come back. Like we're always here. Just reach out. We can always have a meeting anytime you need one. So it's been very great. And I really, really appreciate being a part of it.
That's awesome. What's the wind in your sails? What keeps you going?
I don't know if I talked about this, but I remember like where I faced a crash at some point where I was like, this is not working. Because I was like, I don't know if I can do this, you know? And that's when I sat with myself and I was like, what do you see yourself doing forever, whereby you don't care if it pans out or not? It was this, the mental health aspect. And I'm an artist. I like art, you know, I like creative expression. I like dancing, you know, like with a hula hoop, like we talked about earlier, you know, I like the type of stuff. So I was like, okay, how do I mix the two together? And this is where this came about, making your hobbies therapy. And also like community, the community building, it really all came together. And just knowing that I am building that slowly but steadily, that's what keeps me going.
Oh, I really love that. That's really amazing. And did we talk enough about mental health on the episode? I know we wanted to really get into it a little bit about there's a mental health crisis in the United States right now, and I'm sure in other countries as well, across the board. So maybe you wanted to say a little bit more about that and how art can be a part of it.
Oh, yeah. I saw this study that 1 in 5 Americans suffers from mental illness. Half of the people that have mental illness don't actually get treated. And it's for a lot of factors. And, you know, it's expensive if you don't have insurance, especially. There's no access, lack of education around it. So it's a lot of reasons. That's where a hobby comes in. Like, you know, like it's trying to help a little bit where it can. So in terms of like the financial aspect, sessions are $5. And in terms of accessibility, if you have Wi-Fi and you have a phone, you know, you can access it. And I know like not everybody has that, but like we're trying to help in that aspect. In terms of community, there's groups, support groups on hobby based on interests. So if you like art, you can find an art group. And I'm not going to lie, they're not huge groups, you know? I mean, it's a new concept. It's 8 months since the pivot, so it's growing. But there is people in the groups and people chat sometimes. I remember like somebody had posted like a cry for help and somebody else actually replied them. They were actually talking together and then helping each other out. And it made me be like, okay, you know what? I should keep going with this. Like this is why you're doing this. The aspect in art and mental health is it brings what is in your head on the outside. And that helps take the emotional weight off of you. The best way to explain this, for example, is with journaling. You have all these mini thoughts going up in your head, you know, like your anxieties, your fears, all these things going on that you internalize. Like, you know, you just keep pushing the back of your head, don't really think about it all day. But if you take the time, for example, you sit down and you write out how you're feeling, you know, with purpose, you know, like a gratitude journal, you like paint what you're feeling, like express what you're feeling. And if you do this enough, you start to see a pattern. You stop internalizing all these things and they become an actual thing that you can look at and analyze. So like that's the whole point of art and mental health. Like it helps you bring it out of your head and onto a piece of paper.
That's great. Yeah, I think I took a psychology 101 class in college and she's like, if you're having circular thoughts, just like put them on paper and then go to bed. But yeah, I think that that's really a beautiful way to put it. So thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else you'd like to promote?
I mean, I'm here to talk about hobby. So that's what I would like to promote. You can go check out the app. We have a website and an app now because I'm a mental health person. You know, don't forget to take care of yourself. Don't forget to be kind to yourself. And it doesn't have to be through hobby, but try to use art as a form of mental wellness. My task to you, the listener, is try journaling, for example, try drawing out your feelings, try dancing out that stress and see if you feel a difference after.
What a wonderful way to end the episode. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story and talking about hobby. You can subscribe to the show and find notes along with the complete transcript for this episode at giantrobots.fm. If you have questions or comments, email us at hosts@giantrobot.fm, and you can find me on thoughtbot.social at vguido. This podcast is brought to you by Thoughtbot and produced and edited by Mandy Moore. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Did you know Thoughtbot has a referral program? If you introduce us to someone looking for a design or development partner, we will compensate you if they decide to work with us. More info on our website at tbot.io/referral, or you can email us at referrals@thoughtbot.com with any questions.